This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wrestling Network, fans and family, welcome back to your home for everything modern day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's main event. I'm your tri-host, Scott Criscolo. Busy show as always, all news on all the promotions, and I mean all of them. We got a lot of fun to talk about tonight, and we're going to go back in time to the slop shop. But it is episode 168, and I'm going to reverse introductions this week. We'll begin with the conscience of Place to Be Nation and the guy who can try to name me another 68 besides the greatest perm in NHL history, Mr. Jaromir Jagr. Steve Willie once had a great perm.
No, I would never have a perm ever, ever, ever. we had a friend. No one cares about this whatsoever, but I'm going to talk about it anyways because I'm tired, and I'm going to just...
That's just perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Talk about stuff nobody cares about.
My dad's friend used to cut our hair when we were kids, and that was, you know, the 80s, and she pretty much gave everyone perms, so I was the only one, pretty much. It was just like, no, I'm good. I don't need you to do anything with that. But Albert Pujols really does want to be mentioned, because he's still kicking it. He might finally be retiring this year, right?
Well, he's age 68, right?
Yeah. What team was he 68 for? Is he
Maybe he was in the Cardinal system.
Mm-hmm.
That's my assumption. Maybe he was in the Cardinal system at 68. But what is he now? Oh, he's five, right?
Yeah.
15?
How long has he been
five?
Playing
at
this
in the
point?
League? 68
20
years.
Yeah.
When was he a rookie? 04? No, he was trying to think the year they
Exceeded the rookie limits during the 2001 season.
He
signed through the end of this year.
So this is his 20th season coming up. Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. Anyway, Steve Willie, always a pleasure.
I was going to talk more about things. Like we don't have to have the other guest on. I'm not used to being on first. I was just going to talk.
Because I wanted to give this guy a little extra time to find me an awesome power forward from the 82-83 Bucks that were number 68. But anyway, he is my man. He's everybody's. He is the co-purveyor of the Kings of Sport Patreon. Find me a Paul McKeskey shirt, Godfather Nate Milton.
Jaromir, clutch, rack 'em. That's one of the few things besides the hair I think about whenever I hear somebody talk about Jagr. It's that for about two or three seasons, it seemed like Jim Rome was unnecessarily fascinated by that man's name.
Yeah. I agree.
And just the way he said Jaromir and added extra syllables where they didn't need to be.
Yeah.
But no, we're not here to talk about Jagr. We're here to talk about the greatest forward in Detroit Falcons history, Scott Criscolo.
Who? What?
The late, I'm assuming late because he played in the 20s, but the late great Milt Schoon.
We're assuming. If he's still alive, that would be during this time right now. That would be amazing. Give me some of it. I don't want the vaccine. I want his blood injected into me. If he's still alive.
He's actually shows up today on TNA. He's one of the
yes,
one of the authority figures.
Yes, he's one of
Zabisco, Schoon. We got them all.
Bob Armstrong's vice president. Anyway, Brother Nate, always a pleasure. Boys, another great show ahead of us. Steve mentioned in the B block after our plugs, we will go back to January of 2003 for this week's classic TNA pay-per-view recap. And this one was a little slop-shoppy, but we had some high moments, I think, and some surprises, some big surprises. And we'll have a little fun. So that'll be in the B block. But we have a very busy A block to talk about, because there's a lot of stuff going on in wrestling. And obviously there is a pay-per-view by one promotion this weekend. It is on Sunday. It's their first ever Sunday pay-per-view. Normally, their pay-per-views are on Saturdays. But I am, of course, talking about AEW. And AEW is having their Evolution, I guess you could say, pay-per-view this Sunday from their place in Jacksonville. And we will we'll do a preview. We've got, let's see, looks like eight matches and then one on the pre-show. And we have a casino tag team royale. We got some barbed wire, ladders, and all sorts of fun stuff. So we got a fun little card to talk about later. Also, of course, for me, the big news this week in wrestling, the NWA is back. And you'll obviously hear most of my opinions with the doctor this weekend on the Saturday special. But we all want Nate and Steve's opinions on the NWA rebirth. They have a pay-per-view in 2 weeks, and then Power comes back. Yeah, I think we're all pretty pumped for that. Some championship news out of New Japan. Some belts are being molded into chains like Kama in 1995, like they did with The Undertaker's Urn. A belt is being melted into some of Steve Willey's jewelry. So we'll talk about that. And there is some sketchy news involving WWE and Peacock that is making that deal seem a little not as awesome as we thought it was maybe in the beginning. Although I don't believe anything till I see it. So, but gentlemen, why don't we dive in first with the big pay-per-view this Sunday, AEW Revolution from Daly's Place, Tony Khan's, Rick Moranis' little backyard there in Jacksonville. And come on, seriously? I mean, I know, I know I like to throw my little needles, but look at the guy. Look at him. He looks like Sigourney Weaver's neighbor in Ghostbusters. He does. Same tie, same glasses, same beard, permy hair. He looks like Rick Moranis.
See, Scotty, I see where you're going there, but I think whatever the Venn diagram is between a young Rick Moranis and an older version of the Flash Thompson in the MCU, Tony Revolori, like wherever that midpoint is, that's Tony Khan right there.
Yeah. Flash Thompson.
I can just see him just showing up. Here's Penis Parker, everybody. Mr. Khan, that's unnecessary.
It is, yes, please. Oh, my God. That's going to be great. That's great. So, but they do have a big pay-per-view this week, and once again, $50, too much. But, like, listen, I get you got to pay for pay-per-views. I get that. Nobody's spending $50. No one's spending. I don't care how many AEW fans there are. They'll just watch it. They'll watch next Wednesday on Dynamite and be done with it. But if they dropped it to 30, then they could widen the scope. Mm-hmm. Because what's going to happen is all of the diehards are going to spend their $50 a piece, but they're not going to be able to stretch it if you're going to keep, because WWE fans ain't paying $50 for shit. They're watching stuff for free. That's shit. But they're not paying $50. Knock it down to 30 or even 35, like Attitude Era pay-per-view price, and you might have something. That's just my opinion. But or do a package. All the AEW pay-per-views in a calendar year for $100.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair. You know?
Even $150 wouldn't be that bad. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. You know? So anyway. All right. So there's 9 matches. We've got, let's see, one, I think all the belts are on the line. So, or no, I'm sorry. All right. The only belt not on the line is the TNT title. But there is like a TNT number one contenders match, I suppose. We'll get to that. All right. On the pre-show, little tag team match action. Riho and Thunder Rosa, my girl, taking on DBB, DMD, and Rebel. Obviously, Thunder Rosa is going to be very busy because she'll be on this show, and then 2 weeks later, she will be at Back in the Battle, which we'll talk about shortly. So, as is Serena Deeb, who I don't see on this show at all. I guess this is a buy-in match to kind of get people pumped up. I don't know. What do you think, Nate?
I think it's interesting that two revolutions in a row, Britt Baker is in the pre-show.
Yeah, I don't get that. I don't get that at all.
But I think it'll be a fun little match. I guess it makes more sense for Britt and Reba to go over just because we have no idea how long Rio's sticking around, and we don't have any clue what Thunder Rosa's availability will be, you know, after this month. So I think, you know, that's also another way you can kind of advance Britt's storyline.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. What do you think, Steve?
I think it'll be interesting. I just finished watching Dynamite from this week before we went on the air, and they implied that Reba is injured. So, and Baker is trying to get a replacement. So it'll be, you know, I'm not sure what they'll do there. If it'll just, I mean, I'm sure it's not going to be a giant surprise or anything like that. But we'll see. I think it's just, I mean, these shows are just to get people excited. I'm not honestly sure who's going to win it, to be honest. I think they just announced it this week. I'm excited to see Riho back. I really was impressed by the women's finale of the tournament. And in fact, I've heard really good things about it. So I might go back and watch that. And it sounded like Riho had a good appearance as well in there. So, it really all depends who they bring in for Reba, if anybody. But I'm just excited to see all four of them wrestle. But yeah, interesting, because Riho was in the buy-in too for Revolution last year. It was, Riho and someone else from Japan that I just can't recall. Maybe it was Emi Sakura.
Last year?
Yeah.
Let me see. Last year, the buy-in match was it was Britt and Penelope Ford against Rio and Yuka Sakazaki.
Yeah, I was there, and I don't remember. I remember Riho winning, and I remember being like, "Why is Britt Baker and Penelope Ford together?" That was like right around the time Britt started chain going heel.
Right. Yeah. So okay.
But hey, there's two women's matches on the card. So
yes, there
that is. That is an upgrade for most of the pay-per-views.
That is. We do have an AEW women's title match, and we'll get to that in a minute. All right, time for the proper. We begin with a casino tag team, because you know they love doing this gambling shit. a casino tag team royale for a future AEW World Tag Team Championship match. The teams are Bear Country, Boulder and Bronson. The Dark Order, Reynolds and Silver. The other Dark Order, Uno and Grayson. The Inner Circle, Santana and Ortiz. Butcher and the Blade, Private Party, Top Flight, Death Triangle, Varsity. It sounds like teams on, like, I don't know, Mortal Kombat. Varsity Blondes. Is that like the Varsity Club? It does have Pillman Jr. on it. The Seidel Brothers. SoCal, SCU. Let's see. So, the Natural Nightmares, Dustin and QT, Chaos Project, Gun Club, and a TBA. A TBA.
That's nobody. They always have one secret. They always have one secret. It'll be like the Rock and Roll Express or something like that.
AEW's the master of adding last second. Like, they love doing that shit.
In the Battle Royals? Yeah.
And the winner of this gets a future AEW tag title match. Steve, who do you like?
Who I want to win, who I'm intrigued by, is someone who, you know, Tony Khan, Booker, you know, Booker of the Year, Booker of the Millennium, Booker of really the universe, I thought, actually a really good idea this past week after the Shaq match, immediately go to a Pac and Phoenix as Death Triangle squash match, which was like this like 3-minute squash match where they showed off like amazing, like, incredible moves. And so I think the two of them against the Young Bucks would be really good. Mm. If there's another match that I will think, maybe I'll say it later on as we go over the tag title match that might be intriguing to have. But I will save that because who knows? Nate might be the one who brings this up.
Nate, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this match just goes to show you what an embarrassment of riches this company has in the tag division. You know, minus those last two teams on the list. But like with SCU or, you know, either one of the Dark Orders or Santana and Ortiz is almost an afterthought. Mm-hmm. And they may be like arguably the best team in the company if given the chance. Like I like Top Flight a lot. I think Private Party's improved over the year. But if I had to put a bet down, like the Varsity Blondes are really fun. Like I think they're a really fun quality babyface team, which is a hard thing to do in wrestling, it seems these days. Like they're genuine white meat babyfaces. If I had to put money down, if I had to go on the AEW Casino app, which you can now find in the App Store, apparently, I would put my money on the Death Triangle just because Phoenix has earned it. Like, Pac's a big, big name in this company, but Phoenix has earned it over the past 3 or 4 months. Like, you can make the argument, Scotty, that this dude is one of the best performers in the world right now. You know, he managed to make a Lance Archer match gripping and compelling. Like, Phoenix is out here working miracles every week, so that would be my first choice, if not them. And again, it'll all go to who wins the tag title match, because I've got thoughts on that. But if not them, I think the feel-good story would be for one of the Dark Order teams to win.
Okay. I'm going to go with... I'm going to take a shot in the dark and go with the Natural Nightmares, Dustin and QT. That's my upset pick. I think Dustin has worked hard since he's been here, and I think he's the only like Cody buddy that hasn't really been quote rewarded. So I'm going to roll with that and go with them in the upset. Next tag match. Miro, wow, he's wrestling, and Kip Sabian versus best friends, Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor. What do you think, Nate?
This feud has dragged on for far too long, Steve Willie.
Yes, but, it has.
But I think we'll get a decent match out of this. Unfortunately, I don't think this is the match that is the blow off for the feud. I think they still feel that this has legs, even though I would highly disagree. But I'm going to say, in order to keep this thing moving forward, let's give the win to Miro and Sabian.
I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm going to go with Chuck Taylor and Orange Cassidy. I think Chuck is going to get a revenge, but he's going to do it by beating Kip Sabian because I feel that it's time to move Miro up the card now and start making him into the monster that he should be. And yeah, this has dragged on too long. It's dragged on long enough that it's actually, in my opinion, brought Orange Cassidy down. ever since like the Mimosa Mayhem, and then he had a fun little thing with Silver. This has kind of brought him down a little bit, where the focus has been on Chuck Taylor. And Cassidy's just kind of been, he really hasn't been wrestling at all. I don't know if he's fighting an injury or what, but he really hasn't been in many matches. It's, you know, Trent's out and just feels like he's treading water right now. So that's, I think, like, Taylor gets his revenge. Miro, you know, maybe, I can't imagine Miro versus Orange Cassidy. That doesn't seem like a smart move to do. You know, you got the TNT title. Miro versus Darby would be kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I can see him going for the championship in a few months' time.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Miro and Kip Sabian here. I think this is Miro's chance to kind of get a move ahead, a push. All right, next, face of the Revolution ladder match for a future AEW TNT championship. Cody Rhodes, Scorpio Sky, Penta El Zero Miedo, Lance Archer, Max Caster, and a maybe. I like Scorpio Sky. Steve?
I like Scorpio Sky as well. He had a little bit of a heel personality this past week, and you need a heel to go against Darby. I don't think it's Cody's time. I think he's had more than enough shots, either holding or going up for the TNT title. Max Caster, I don't think that works. Penta, I don't think that's the right way to go, as he's been wrestling as a face. I think Scorpio makes sense to me. If why else would they be doing a little bit of a heel gimmick with him? And he's another guy who deserves to be higher up the card. Who, I know he was fighting an injury as well, but they always talk about him being underrated and being one of the most athletic people on the roster. So, all right, let's give him another shot. He had a great match against Cody for the TNT title, I believe early last year as well.
Yeah, like I think Scorpio's would be my call for all the reasons that you mentioned, Steve. Also, just to kind of get meta with it, I think AEW has come under some criticism over the past week after Bobby Lashley won the WWE title. And you look at a lot of the champions in the WWE right now, which is shockingly diverse. And you look at the champions on the AEW side of things, and there's not a lot of that diversity. So I think for both reasons of Scorpio earning this opportunity and being in the right place in the right time, but also, like, yes, this would be an easy way to kind of check that box for Tony Khan. So Scorpio's my pick. If you want to throw out a dark horse, though, you know, I'm going to be a little bit guarded with my opinion here, like the great Russ Graham. That's another one for the people out there, Scotty. if you want a dark horse, I would say Cody. And the only reason I would say Cody, Steve, is because Cody and Darby is another way to get to Cody and Sting. Because now Cody Rhodes is messing with Sting's son here. So that that could be a way if you want another path to get to Cody versus Sting.
Okay. Yeah, I dig that. Scorpio Sky is one of those guys I always love, and you guys know me. I've been talking about him from the beginning, and I feel like he's due. I feel like he's due for the big moment, the big singles moment. So I'm gonna go with Scorpio Sky on this one. And then the extra guy, is this where the big Hall of Famer guy is gonna be? The extra guy here, really?
I don't know. I think that's gonna be something separate altogether. Like a big announcement. I hope it's not another, like, well, they said Hall of Famer. Like,
because I think if we go back to Paul White's big announcement on Dynamite, he said his exact words were a Hall of Fame level person is going to come in and sign a contract. And so, like, yeah, I think that would be the spot for whoever this person is rather than random anonymous person in this TNT ladder match.
Yeah, I think so too. So who knows who it's going to be? I don't think whoever it is going to win. I'm going to go with Scorpio Sky. All right, the big money match winner. This is so meta. This is like the most meta gimmick I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Winner receives the loser's first quarter earnings. This is such a Tony Khan thing. It's fucking ridiculous.
It's like a territory thing.
Yes.
Like, turned up a notch. It's like something you'd see in, like, Mid-South or your, like, UWF or something like that.
The only thing that would make this better is if Brandon Thurston was the referee.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And
Well, Chris Harrington works for AEW, so friends of partner.
Maybe Brandon's prospectus or his 2020 is, like, at the top of the ladder, maybe.
Yeah, whoever can climb up and...
Yeah. That could be very interesting. So, all right. Well, it's Hangman Page and Matt Hardy. Hangman Page should win this.
Oh yeah.
What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, this is like when you're cooking, Steve Willie. Like, you might be cooking spaghetti or maybe some greens or maybe a nice stew, a little Brunswick stew for these cold nights, Steve Willie. And you know, you got it to the temperature you want it to be at, but you don't want to quite let the stew get cold. So you turn the eye down to low and just let it simmer for a little while. That's where Hangman Page is at right now. I think, you know, they spent the past year heating him up, but they're not quite ready to serve him to the people in a main event fashion yet. So we're just going to, you know, let it simmer here with Big Money Matt. And this is just another step towards Hangman Page being in that main event spot, challenging for the title again.
Hmm.
Yeah, I definitely. We're on the same page a lot tonight, Nate. I think Page is going to be the person who eventually unseats Omega. Like, the story is right there for you. So I am not a fan of the storyline, specifically with Matt Hardy, who keeps switching gimmicks on seemingly a quarterly basis.
Yes.
Now he's like, oh, I've turned Private Party heel, and I'm taking 30% of their money, and now I'm trying to pay off people to pick off members of the Dark Order, and it just feels like this is just me speculating, like just like politicking to get his way. I mean, he was in the main event of Dynamite this past week, you know, on a show that Shaq was on. So it just feels like he's, you know, kind of working his way to be up on top and continuing. Like, his in-ring stuff is just not good. It was dangerous when he was with Sammy Guevara. Mm. And now it's just like, I'd rather see Jeff fighting. I think Jeff would be safer and more fluid. And Jeff's a broken down man. And it's just not working for me at all at this point. And to kind of put a match with Hangman Page, who is one of the most over guys in the company, even though he's kind of in, you know, like the mid card right now, it just seems like a big waste for him to do this kind of silly angle.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've said for a while that I think this guy's gotten boned more than anybody in AEW. Yeah, he was tag champs with Kenny, and they had the greatest match ever, the greatest tag team match in the history of the universe. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he never got his title shot back after losing to Jericho, and he's like one of the legit natural pure guys, and he's kind of gotten forgotten in the mid card. So I think he wins this match. And I think something's due for him down the line, no doubt. Our women's title is on the line. Hikaru Shida, who's been champion for quite a while, taking on Rio Mizunami. Nate, what do you think?
Shida retains. I think it'll be a fun match, though. You know, as Steve alluded to earlier, I enjoyed a lot of the women's tournament over the past couple weeks. And I think there's something, like, for anybody that watched Dynamite last night, we got a bit of a more aggressive Rio. And see, now I'm thinking about Rio. We got a bit of a more aggressive Shida. And I don't know if this is leading to a heel turn per se, but she could do with a little more aggression. And there's also, like, the look, the aesthetic right now that she's got, Steve, with the white suit. Like, just it's a badass look. It reminds me of when Loki used to do the Hitman gimmick. I think it'll be a fun match, but Shida's the one that you're invested in. You know, Shida's the one that's going to be sticking around, so Shida takes it here.
Mm. Yeah, I think Shida takes it as well. I think it's going to be a really fun match. I think Mizunami was on one of the very first Dynamites they had said. So I don't really remember her, but the finale that she had against Nyla Rose, I thought was fantastic.
Yeah,
it was really fun, and she had a lot of great energy. So, and I guess they have a history; they were tag team partners at one point. So she has so much like kind of positive, goofy energy that I can't see. I almost said Kushida, Shida having that more heel like personality. While we were talking to Tony Khan had said that the person, the Hall of Fame worthy signing will not be in the ladder match, but it is Hall of Fame worthy and it is a major, huge, huge star who will be signing a multi-year deal. Yeah. That'll be interesting. Now you really gotta deliver.
Yeah. No Coco Beware's here.
Yeah, that is backing yourself in a corner right there.
Tony Khan, I know Tony Khan is listening since he just made that announcement after we questioned him, Steve Willie, and I don't know how you're listening to a podcast that's not even out yet, but that's the brilliance of Promoter of the Year, Tony Khan. But Tony Khan, I'm telling you this, man to man, if you bring in Terry Bollea to this company,
oh no,
you're dead to me, Khan, you're dead to me.
Oh no, oh my God, that would be hysterically hypocritical and hysterical at the same time. I would absolutely love it, but who knows? I don't know.
I mean, look, we already saw Bischoff this past week, so where there's a Bischoff, there's a Bollea.
That's right. That is true. Business is business, isn't it, Tony? Speaking of business and Hall of Famers, guess who's wrestling his first AEW match and his first wrestling match in 5 years? Your boy there, Nate. I guess he hasn't been a boy in a while. the man they call Sting is wrestling with Darby Allin, your TNT champion, against Team Taz, Brian Cage, and Ricky Starks in a street fight. Obviously, the gimmick is to protect him. I don't know how much of a street fight we're going to see or how long this match can legitimately be, but I think Sting will be fine. He probably won't do much. Probably swing his bat a little bit. I see Darby Allin and Sting winning this. Or I could see Brian Cage or Ricky Starks pinning Darby Allin to lead to a TNT title match down the line. What do you think, Steve?
I'm excited about this match to see how they're going to do it. I think there'll be lots of bells and whistles. The last street fight they did was between Best Friends and Santana Ortiz, and that match was incredible. So I think they have a lot to live up to. There's going to be all sorts of bells and whistles. It's going to be, you know, 5-on-2. And, you know, Sting and Darby's, I think, are gonna go over. They've already did Cage. They've already done Starks against Darby. So this feud has been going on for a very long time. It started with Taz trying to give Darby advice like early last year when the pandemic first hit and they were doing all those marathon tapings at QT's gym.
Right.
So we're almost a year that this has been going on for. And if anything needs to end, more so than Miro and Orange Cassidy in that, it's this. It's been very good, but they've been doing the same shtick each week where Darby or Sting is talking or wrestling, and then Taz or someone else comes out talking, and then there's a stare down or someone. It's every week at this point, so let's do this street fight. You know, 10 minutes of, you know, quote-unquote cinematic match, and Sting, Darby go over, and let's move on.
Yeah, I think that it'll be a safe match, but it'll be fun. And I think that we'll make some noise, but you know, he did get hurt. And he's got to be careful. But you know what? If you're going to bring Sting in, he's got to do more than just cut promos. So if you're going to pay for Sting, he's got to do a little something. So I'm okay with this. I think it'll be a fine match to protect. I think Brian Cage and Ricky Starks and Darby Allin will do all the bumps. And I think that'll be a fun match, but I'm a little nervous. I just hope Sting knows what he's doing. And I think he does. And our main event. Oh, no, wait, we got one more. Sorry. World Tag Team titles on the line. The Young Bucks, your champions, against Chris Jericho and MJF. I know they're going to try and like set the world on fire. I think it'll be manageable, but I think the Young Bucks retain. I think the match will be fun, but I'm not expecting like, you know, 39,000 stars. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I think it'll be a fun match, much like, you know, the Sting Darby versus Team Taz match. Like this card is really, really strong. Like, I think that, you know, it's not $50 strong, but it's a really strong card from top to bottom. And I would say, if I'm putting money down on that AEW casino app, I'm going with the champs, because another story that's been told for a long time here, Steve Willie, is the story of the disintegration of the Inner Circle. And I think that having MJF and Jericho lose does more to forward that story than if they win and then we've got another month or two of them feuding before they drop the titles eventually. So I think it'll be a really strong match, but at the end of the day, it makes more sense for the Bucks to keep it. I'm thinking, you know, we talked about time with the last match. I think this match doesn't get like the epic treatment, like the Paige Omega match, but I do think we get, you know, a solid 15-minute burner here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I do too. I do too. And I think the Bucks retain, because I have a feeling whoever wins that future world tag title match might be something we see at Double or Nothing. So. Or one of their, you know, Dynamite theme shows. Although they should hold it till Double or Nothing. So that's just me. And finally, a match that has never been seen before in the history of professional wrestling. Never have we seen barbed wire, explosives, two men who are experienced in the art of pure violence. And just, oh, wait. Oh, shit. Sorry. This was my GWCW script for Cactus and Funk. Sorry. Let me read. Oh, here we go. Two guys who don't know what the hell they're doing are going to try and kill each other for the AEW championship. Kenny Omega and John Dean Ambroxley in an exploding barbed wire death match. I get that Tony Khan was probably a little ECW, you know, turd like most of us were in the 90s, but this is stupid. I mean, this is really stupid. They had that ridiculous whatever match last year with the mattress and the box spring and whatever the hell that was. And that was overkill. What the hell are they going to do Sunday? I don't get it. I just don't get it. I mean, I think Kenny's going to retain because he's a better champion and a better wrestler. And that's me saying that of all things. But I just... when is the clock going to strike midnight on everybody realizing that Jon Moxley is just an average wrestler? And he, it's time for Kenny to move on to another challenger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm partially subjective because I fucking can't stand the guy, but I'm objective because I think it's time to move on to other challengers as we move ahead to Double or Nothing and then to All In or All Out in the fall. What is your take, Nate?
Yeah, Kenny retains. Like, these matches aren't my cup of tea. You know, these matches are, as Tim Capel would say, they're overindulgent. But I feel like for what it is, like, this is certainly, you could tell, like, the people putting this match together are not only ECW stands, Scott, but they're also, like, you know, old hardcore Japanese wrestling fans.
Right.
And so, like, they'll throw in all the bells and whistles. I feel like it'll be a good approximation of that type of match. That's just not the type of match I'm interested in. But that being said, Kenny should win. He will win because this is the story that needs to be told going forward. You know, we've already kicked in the forbidden door, so to speak. So he's the guy that is the protagonist of this story until Hangman Page comes along to knock him off. And so the bigger question to me, though, Scott, is what do you do with Moxley after this? Because I don't know, like, you know, you talked about Sting earlier and said, you know, if you're paying him all his money, then he's got to wrestle. And I think the same logic applies to John Moxley. Like, he's not my favorite, but if you're paying this dude all this money, you know, and we're not putting him in a match where his quarterly earnings are up for grabs, then he's got to do something. And so, like, I don't know what John Moxley upper mid carder slash regular mid carder looks like going forward.
Yeah, no, I agree. What do you think, Steve? I mean, just to kind of cross things here, we all know that Moxley retained the IWGP US title over Kenta, which makes no fucking sense whatsoever. I don't see him winning here, and it's time to move other guys forward. It's time to move Hangman Page. It's time to move some of these natural bred AEW guys and start giving Kenny Omega some unique challengers.
Well, I'm actually excited for this match because I'm interested to see what their take of this was going to be.
You're such a sadist. No, you're not. You're the least sadist. You know what's funny, Steve? You're the least sadist person I know. So you're the least sane person I know, but that's a different story altogether.
I'm not a big deathmatch person. Like, I'm really not. Like, all the light bulb tube stuff. I'm just... It's not my kind of thing. I did enjoy, like, some of those, you know, like the Funk Cactus match, like some of the Japan, like the Terry Funk Japan, like Onita stuff. I did enjoy that because it was just so silly. And that's what I'm wondering what they're going to do here. I'm intrigued by, because I have a feeling that this is mostly Kenny, and I'm intrigued by Kenny's way of thinking. It's just, he's a different cat. Like, he really is. He's an oddball, and I respect the fact that he's an oddball. They showed a little bit of their, I mean, they're taking down the ropes, and they're going to put, like, this kind of wood, like, barbed wire, like, with wood trim on it or something like that. It was very bizarre looking.
Right.
So
right.
I'm just intrigued on what they're going to do. And as, you know, I am buying this because... Well, I'm not letting my son see this match until I watch it first. But
yeah, obviously.
You know, as Big Money Steve, I, you know, $50 is nothing for me. So, but yeah, I'm really intrigued by this match. Just as it could be a potential train wreck, it could be really fun. I know your dislike of John Moxley, Scott, and I'm going to give you something here that you will like. You know, I talked a little bit about it to you the other day, but I did watch the match with Kenta, and I thought it was grossly mediocre. It was like 14 minutes, like they're filming that strong in a sound studio somewhere with no crowd whatsoever.
Right.
I thought it was an above average Raw match. Like, they did like a token table spot. It wasn't even a great Raw match. It wasn't a great Dynamite match. It wasn't even really a good John Moxley match, to be fair, to be honest. Mm. And there's part of me that thinks, in terms of what they're going to do with Moxley, I think they're going to move him down, and I think he's going to take some time off with Renee having the baby, because there's just, it doesn't feel like there's much to do with him right now. You know, he might be a part of the New Japan show. Like, I can't imagine him. Like, I thought, oh, maybe he'll just go to Japan for a couple months and do some stuff there. Like, New Japan just announced a summer show at the Tokyo Dome, which is like literally just announced that today during the anniversary show. So, like, oh, maybe he can do that. But then you're like, wait, his wife is having a baby soon. So I think that it's time for him to just, you know, have some time, maybe do a couple of these indie shows that he's doing, like the Bloodsport matches. AEW doesn't really have any giant shows coming up for a while. Renee having the baby. Obviously, I thought Omega's, you know, going to win based on what I'm saying and what you guys are saying. But it is time for – he's been on the top of the card for over a year now. Mm-hmm. They have been – having a lot more younger guys on Dynamite the last few weeks, getting a chance to get some shine. And yeah, let's move some of those guys up. Let's move Paige up. Let's move people up. You know, Dark Order is hugely over right now. get some of those guys working more of the mid-card to upper mid-card, and then, you know, heat them back up. That is something that AEW has done that I have admired, that they will push some guys down the card for a while, like Omega for a while even, in between that tag team run where he split with Paige and before he started doing his single matches. Like, he wasn't wrestling for a good couple months.
Right.
So that's what I hope. You know, people love Moxley. I'm not the biggest fan of his. I think there's many, many people on the AEW roster who are better than he is. But I get the intrigue of his character. I get that people like him. I'm babbling, but that is okay.
No, you know what? I'm going to say it now. We've gotten our opinions on the match, on the show. All right, before I talk about Moxley for a minute, because I am going to give my opinion first about him, because people wonder why I have just unhealthy dislike of him, and I'll tell you why, but we'll get to that in a minute. All right, so Nate, two questions for you. Overall, do you think this is going to be a good show? And B, who is the walkout? Who is this fucking Bruno Sammartino-ish thing that Tony Khan has built up out of nowhere to join AEW? Who do you think the show's going to be good, and what's your pick?
Yeah, I think the show's going to be good. At minimum, I think it'll be a good show. It has the potential with some of these matches to exceed that and be like a really damn good show or even a great show. You know, again, like, I think the asking price is a bit of a sticking point for a lot of people. But relative to some of the other AEW shows that folks have shelled out $50 for in the past, I think this one will be more worth it than the others. I'll just put it in that way. In terms of the surprise, again, hoping it's not terrible Leia. I think there's a lot of theories, you know, Kurt Angle I think Brian Mann, my former Keeper 2000 tag team partner, threw out the completely ridiculous but amazing, it's never going to happen, but it's fun to think about, idea of John Cena, since he is in that Warner Brothers AT&T family now. But I think if I had to put money down, I'd put most of my money on a guy like Kurt Angle, and maybe a dollar. I'd put a dollar on, you know, as a flyer on CM Punk, but most of my money I'd wager on Kurt Angle.
Okay. Okay. Mm. Steve, overall, your thoughts on how you think the show is going to be and who's your pick?
If it's not Brock Lesnar at this point, I'm going to be disappointed. Boy, I really hope it's Brock Lesnar. I think that could be a whole lot of fun, especially having someone else book Brock Lesnar to see if he can do more than 47 German suplexes and 72 F5s. I think it's going to be a really fun show. There's just quite a wide variety of matches on it, which intrigues me. I'm excited for the between this and Mania coming up. This was the show of the year last year because it was one of the last in-person shows that we could go to that was a big-name pay-per-view. And I think they have a lot to live up to because of that.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I think the show will be good. I think the tag team match, the tag title match, will overachieve. I think the other matches will live up to their level, and I think Moxley and Kenny will be a sloppy shit show, and I don't think it will exceed the box spring mattress match they had last year or whatever that was, or the year before. I guess it was last 2 years ago. I guess, right? Was it? Full Gear 19? Was that the box spring mattress match?
Yeah.
It was. All right. So Full Gear 19 was the box spring mattress match. And I watched that. I did watch that. And it was, all right. I'm gonna lay it out on the table now. I don't care who disagrees with me. This is my opinion. And that's that. And then we'll move on to other topics. AEW was supposed to be a promotion based on a groundswell by Cody of building talent, pulling from the indies, and building. Getting a guy like Jericho was nice because he's like an established veteran that could build up guys. But they were all about the Darby Allins and the Hangman Pages and the Scorpio Skies and the the Kennys and the Bucks and like young guys, you know, I guess Kenny's not really young per se, but but you know, what is he? He's probably in his early 30s at this point. And all the young talent that they're bringing in, and the women, which of course that division still leaves a lot to be desired, but they're trying. But they bring in a guy simply because he was the first one to bitch the loudest about WWE, and AEW brought him in because at the time that's what Cody wanted to do. Cody wanted to stick his thumb in Triple H's eye, which at this point now, 2 years later or 3 years later, I guess both sides could give two shits at this point. And that's a good thing for wrestling fans. We don't care anymore. We don't care. But instead, you have kicked a bunch of guys to the curb and pushed guys to the background and have pushed a guy who's always been a mediocre wrestler. Let's be honest. He was the least talented of the Shield. Let's be honest. He was. And he's been pushed to the moon. New Japan gives him a belt that he doesn't have to lose, even though he's not in that company. They made him world champion. And all these other guys like Kenny, like Hangman Page, who I like a lot. He was my favorite. When that promotion started, he was my favorite guy in that company. Next to Scorpio Sky was Hangman Page. And he has gotten fucked since losing to Chris Jericho at All Out. Meanwhile, this guy, just because his wheel squeaked the loudest, is getting like the world. And Wrestler of the Year, I mean, that's fucking ridiculous. I'm sorry, it is. It's fucking ridiculous. And I'm not even talking about WWE guys, because apparently we're not allowed to be fans of the other four promotions in the world. Either you're an AEW fan or you're a WWE fanboy. And people are going to disagree with me, and you know where I am. Just say it. I don't care. But there have been a ton of great wrestlers all across wrestling that are better than him. But squeaky wheel gets the oil. But now it's time for him to move on, pull a Seth Rollins, and go enjoy your the birth of your son or daughter, and let somebody else beat Kenny for the title. I will be floored if he wins on Sunday. Floored. And I just don't know why. So that's why. Because a guy who had a lot in WWE. It's not like, he's not like Dolph fucking Ziggler, okay? And he's not like fucking, Apollo Crews, you know? Although I'm starting to kind of like Apollo's heel turn, Nate. I think we're digging that, right? We're kind of digging it.
Well, it's how he should have been presented from day one.
I think so, honestly. Too. Yeah, I think so, too. That kind of, the smile shouldn't be a smile of humble. It should be a smile of smug. That's what it should be. Anyway, guys like that I see. But that fucking guy, he won a Money in the Bank, cashed it in that night. I have a goddamn DVD cover of him being carried out of the ring at Battleground 2016 because he merged the titles. He won the brand war, whatever. Remember in 2016? After having to wrestle that dumpster fire match with Brock at WrestleMania in Dallas, won a match at SummerSlam, and then lost the title at Backlash to, guess what, Johnny? A guy who's better than you! Look in the mirror, John. You're not AJ Styles. He deserved to win that match, and he deserved to have a nice, meaty reign as WWE champion. He deserved it. So he got hurt. He had the storyline with Seth, and then the storyline, and a storyline with Roman, and a storyline, and everything was kind of. Then he leaves, pitches a fit, and he's AEW's golden child. I just don't get that. I thought that they were more mature than that. Having said that, he's made the money. All his t-shirts are ugly, but he's made the money. But I think Sunday, Kenny should beat him, and it's time for Kenny to move on to other challengers. And John Dean Ambrosley should go walk off, enjoy the birth of his child, take time off, rejuvenate, and let this promotion go on without you for a while. Simple as that. There's my reasoning. So for anybody who wondered why I fucking hated the guy so much, that's why. Because all he had to do was leave WWE, cry that he was misused, even though he wasn't, and AEW scooped him up so they could be so Cody could thumb Triple H in the eye, which now they kind of like each other, so that's a different beast altogether. now Moxley's just like collateral damage of the love thing. Although I will laugh if Universal and Warner Brothers does merge, it'll just be the greatest day of my life. But that's just me. Anyway, guys, tremendous Revolution preview. And when we're back in 2 weeks, we'll talk about the ramifications of that and look ahead to there's not a pay-per-view before Double or Nothing, right, Steve?
I don't believe so.
No, Double or Nothing will be the next one, which will, of course, be Memorial Day weekend. All right. Let's talk New Japan. Quick news. The two big belts are merging. Kota Ibushi, our IWGP Heavyweight Champion and our IWGP Intercontinental Champion. The belts are melting. And Steve's going to get a comma necklace, a comma chain of the Intercontinental belt. What do you think, Steve? I think you'll look sexy. Just to let you know. But that's only if you perm your hair like Yarmer Yager. Perm your hair like Yarmer Yager.
There's no perm.
The melted IC chain, and you're in good shape.
I can put Intercontinental chain around my perm. Yes. 70s of going.
All right. So now they're getting rid of one of the secondary belts, which is fine with me. They're one promotion. It's not like Raw and SmackDown where you got to have two secondary belts. So I'm fine with them having just one secondary belt. They already have the light heavyweight. They already got the never open weight. So they've got a ton of singles belts already. Two secondary belts that are even is unnecessary. So I'm okay with this. What do you think, Steve?
I'm fine with it. There's too many belts. And Will Ospreay also brings his British heavyweight championship from RevPro around with him. So there's a lot of belts in this company. And they've also been cutting down on the lengths of the shows because of the pandemic. So they've only been having 5 or 6 matches. And as I talked about last episode, they want to build up the junior heavyweight belt to a main event level championship. So that replaces the Intercontinental title. Unfortunately, there's been a setback with that, with Hiromu Takahashi being out for 6 months since the last time we were on Taurus Peck. So we would have had most likely Ibushi versus Takahashi today. And instead, we had Kota versus El Desperado, which is a giant step back, but I heard that the match was still pretty good. It was something that Ibushi had been pushing. Mm-hmm. There's only so many shows years in a row that you can do a, two title matches in 1 week, or two title matches in two shows, like what they've been doing. So I'm fine with it. It's just been kind of a belt with outside of like Nakamura, who, put it on the map, like Naito always put it down. Like, I mean, he would literally throw the belt around. It wasn't really respected that much, although it is a beautiful belt. The actual physical belt of it is beautiful.
It is. No, I like the IC belt. I mean, it looks just like the world title belt, except the leather's different. Mm-hmm. It's not like I like the U.S. belt, actually. It's just around the waist of trash, but it's a nice belt. I like the U.S. title. I'd just be better off on a better person, but that's just me. Anyway, so little note there in New Japan. Any other news, Steve, New Japan-wise, like shows or anything like that? Anything we need to...
Just that today was the 49th anniversary show. They started the New Japan Cup today. It's going to be 30 people this year. Pretty much the entire roster is on it. The Great Okan got an upset victory and advanced today, and I believe that Jeff Cobb won as well, so he advanced. Evil and Tanahashi got byes into the second round. So their next two really big shows they have three big shows. Now they have the New Japan Cup, they'll have Sakura Genesis at the end of April, which is a kind of like a B-type show, and then they announced Wrestle Grand Slam for May. May 15th will be at Yokohama Stadium, the baseball stadium, and then Tokyo Dome on May 29th. So running Tokyo Dome twice in 1 year.
Right. Some other results. This show was today, so you think we should probably not give results? Want to wait? We'll wait.
That's fine. I gave away the two opening round matches, but the New Japan Cup. But
big shock. There was an 8-man. There's an 8-man tag, a 10-man tag, and a 6-man tag.
Yeah.
Only in New Japan, everybody. Hey, it's like WrestleMania 5. 97 guys and Dino Bravo get paid. So, Master Wato, Gabriel Kidd, Tomoaki Honma, and Hiroki Goto win over Suzuki Gun. Bullet Club beat Taguchi Japan. I'm not going to name all the guys. You know who's in these groups. And then Chaos beat Los Ignorables Diabol in the other matches. So
I do enjoy the fact that Juice and David Finlay are wrestling in two companies on opposite sides of the Pacific Ocean simultaneously right now, because Juice and David Finlay are in Impact as well right now. They were just on Tuesday and they're going against the Good Brothers, but they're also New Japan simultaneously. Right. It's like when Rick Rude showed up on Nitro on the same night he was on Raw.
Yes, yes. Yes, that is true. Yes, mustache and mustache-less. All right, so I got the brackets in front of me. This tournament will go, the New Japan Cup tournament goes till the 21st. We already have one round two match, Evil against Jeff Cobb, as you mentioned. Great O'Conn will take on the winner of Toriano and Fale. Here's the rest of the first round matches. Let's see. Taichi against Hiroki Goto. Okada, who some people think is the guy Sunday, but nah. He's a run-in guy. He's not a guy you announce ahead of time. Well, the guy you announce ahead of time is a guy that like is universally known. Okada's a guy that comes in and costs Moxley the title.
And also, there's this pandemic going on, and you can't just show up when you wrestled today on a Thursday. You can't fly from Japan to Florida and not quarantine.
To be fair, Florida is the wild, wild west.
Yeah, Florida
next to Texas. But they're still 2.5%, so who knows who's doing what right. But anyway,
I get being excited about this stuff. I really do. But, like, come on. Like, just a little bit of common sense.
I know, exactly.
I'm just imagining Steve, like, Fauci physically trying to block Okada from entering the state.
Yes, and Okada gives him the I know, that'd be fantastic. So Okada will face Shingo Takagi. I think it will be.
Watch Honma. I was just going to say, watch Okada shows up. And I'm an idiot.
I don't think he will. Honma and Suzuki. Tomoki Honma will take on Minoru Suzuki. Juice faces Kenta. That should be a fun match. Tenzan against Will. Tenzan and Will. I think that'll be a fun match.
Interesting. Hold on. Pause.
Yes, sir.
Steve Willie.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
We're getting this. You know, now you got the wheel spinning here, Steve Willie.
Uh-oh.
Because did Tony Khan explicitly say that this person would physically be in the building?
I don't think he did.
Could we get Okada via satellite, a la The Rock?
Like The Rock? Yes. And then he turns heel when everybody boos him?
Yes. Hollywood Okada, I'm here for
Hollywood Okada. That would be fantastic. That would legitimately be fantastic. Where was I? Juice Robinson. Hiroshi Tenzan will take on Will. Gabriel Kidd will take on ZSJ. Yota Tsuji against Yuji Nagata. Tomohiro Ishii against Sonata. David Finlay versus Chase Owens. Yoshihashi against Takahashi. Hanare against Jay White. Toa Hanare against Jay White. And Hiroshi Tanahashi has a bye. What's the winner get? It's just a the cup's nice. That's a beautiful cup.
They also
future
get
championship match of their choice. Yep. Okay. Past winners include Hiroshi Tanahashi, won it in 2005. Giant Bernard. The Giant Bernard, guys. Of course, he is now in NXT. We're talking, of course, about Matt Bloom, a.k.a. Albert. Yuji Nagata. Oh, by the way, Giant Bernard challenged Brock in 2006. How do you think that match went?
Those are the low times.
Yeah. Yuji Nagata won in 2007. He challenged Tanahashi and won. Tanahashi then won the following year in 2008, and he challenged Nak at New Dimension and lost. Hiroki Goto won three of the next 4 years. 2009, challenged Tanahashi, lost. 2010, challenged Nak, lost. 2012, challenged Okada, lost. not exactly Royal Rumble percentages here. Yuji Nagata won in 2011. He challenged Tanahashi, lost. Okada won his first of two. He won in 2013. Challenged Tanahashi, won. Those were all for the world title. Nak won in 2014 and challenged Tanahashi for the IC belt at Invasion Attack and won. Ibushi won in 2015, challenged AJ for the world title and lost. Naito won in 2016, challenged Okada, lost. Oh, won. I'm sorry, he won. Shibata won in 2017, challenged Okada, lost.
Lost.
Zack Sabre won in 2018, challenged Okada, lost.
Lost.
Okada won in 2019, challenged Jay White, won. I was there. That was the match at the Garden. And Evil won last year and challenged Naito at Dominion and won. But we talked about that last year, didn't we, Steve?
Mm-hmm.
And Nate. So the winner, actually, it's already set. The winner will get a title shot against Ibushi at Sakura Genesis. So that's official, Steve.
Okay.
So the winner of the tournament will face Ibushi at Sakura Genesis. So that's set. So we'll keep an eye on that tournament. All right. I want your opinions, guys, because for me personally, this is huge news. That's why even Moxley in a garbage match Sunday isn't putting me in a bad mood. Because my beloved National Wrestling Alliance is back. They did a hype video tonight that dropped on YouTube. And in 2.5 weeks at Back in the Battle, the first NWA pay-per-view in over a year. The last one was Hot Tams in January of 2020. Back in the Battle from the, I'm assuming it's from Atlanta, I think, from their studios. That's on Sunday, March 21st at 4 o'clock, because as everyone knows, also on that day is Fastlane. That's also the first pay-per-view on Peacock. So we'll see what kind of fucking shit show that's going to be. I think more people will be watching the NWA show, to be honest. But who knows what's going to happen there. We'll talk more about that on our next show, because it's going to happen that weekend. So, and then Billy also announced that my beloved NWA Power will return March 23rd on Fight TV. That's a Tuesday. After that, the weekly show will air on Thursdays on Fight TV. And they, you can watch Power on Fight through a low-cost subscription bundle. Probably the same thing as I did when Dr. G and I did the UWN Primetime Lives. Probably a monthly thing. It's probably be like $25 or something, which I am perfectly fine with. Again, I will reserve my thoughts when the doctor and I are together this weekend on the NWA Saturday special. But guys, I wanted your opinions. Nate, what do you think of these developments? The NWA is not dead. It is very much alive.
Yes, I think it's good news, not only for everybody involved with the NWA, Scotty, but for the business in general. I think that, you know, the only part of the news that rolled out that had me scratch my head a bit was the timing for the pay-per-view. Just because, and again, like I feel like Billy and the crew over there were playing double dutch, trying to find a space in between the AEW show and the run up to WrestleMania. So it's like, if we can't find the best date, what's the least bad date that we can land on? And so they end up on a date with another show on it. But I do think there might be more intrigue for the NWA show than for Fastlane, Steve Willey. But yeah, I think it's a good move for everybody involved. And the only question I think I have going forward is, what does this mean in terms of people we've seen on other programs? And will this NWA, will they be, you know, I've been back in my comics a little bit, Steve, been back in my comics bag. Will the NWA be like the Green Lanterns that co-mingled with the other Lanterns? Or will the NWA be MOGO? Because as we all know, Steve Willey, MOGO don't socialize. So that's one of the few questions I have about the NWA. But it is a good thing for Billy and for the business.
Whenever there's more places to work, it's good for the performers. And I care more about the performers than I do the owners, and always will. So I think they're going to have to. If they are smart, they will let people like Thunder Rosa continue in AEW. They'll continue to let, well, Serena Deeb is contracted by AEW, but like they're going to want to have as many relationships as possible, because how many people do they even have under contract at this point? Like Aldis, Thunder Rosa, like everyone else is no longer under contract.
Aaron Stevens, J.R. Kratos. The only big guys that left are Eddie Kingston, Eli Drake.
Yeah.
Eli Drake, who's now a vampire. Demon Knight. Oh, wait, wrong show.
LA Gear,
something like that. British Knights. Oh, come on. Who didn't have a nice pair of BKs? they'll have to. I mean, Camille's still there. Serena Deeb is still there. They'll have to rebuild a little bit. I would not be surprised if eventually the NWA reaches out to New Japan.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't bother me. Okada could have a mouthpiece or work it with himself, but Okada and Aldis would be a fun NWA World Heavyweight Title match. I'm just happy they're back, and I'll let the chips fall where they may. They obviously have a big enough roster that they were able to come back. So, and obviously the question mark, Josephus passed away, which is very sad. So we'll keep an eye on this here, and of course on the NWA Saturday special, and see what's going on. But I'm just happy they're back. It was getting depressing. I'm not gonna lie. Having to look at the news and all I have to read is news about Moxley winning more kayfabe awards.
What if Moxley?
God.
Yes, the ultimate talent exchange.
I hope you get a fucking perm, Steve, and it never leaves. If you have any hair left, no. So anyway, I doubt
NWA that. Champion John Moxley.
John Moxley. Oh fucking god. Oh my god. I'd rather have COVID. Anyway, I'd rather have Terry walk in AEW. I'm telling you, Nate, you put it in everybody's head now. You know what's going to happen. Terry wants some business. Maybe what, Steve? Maybe what?
Maybe Terry goes to the NWA.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You know, brother, this is the one belt I've never won, brother. Oh, God. Don't even get me started. All right. Gentlemen, that was an exceptional A block. Lots of news. Lots of everything. Lots of Moxley. Ugh. Bleck. Now, before we go back in time to January of 2003, let's talk about all the great things going on around all of our networks and worlds. And we begin, as always, with you, Godfather Nate Milton. What's going on with you and Papa Marcus and PR Director Baby Simba over on the Kings of Sport Patreon?
Oh, well, what's going on with me, Scott Criscola, besides diving into this amazing AEW casino game? Like, mm-hmm. I haven't played any of the game yet, but all I know is the first thing you see when you turn the game on, Steve Willie, is that man called Sting standing by a poker table. It's like, okay, I'm here. I'm in. I don't know. I don't know if it's Texas Hold'em. I don't know what the rules are, but Sting at a poker table, deal me in, buddy. So other than that, when I'm not playing AEW poker, I am part of the Kings of Sport Patreon, myself and Marcus Vandenberg, as Scott mentioned, where this month we have a brand new episode of the Kings of Sport, which just dropped this afternoon. Marcus and I talked about the NBA at the break. We talked about some of the latest NFL transactions. We talked about Bobby Lashley winning the WWE title, and we talked about COVID 1 year in, because we're approaching that 1 year anniversary of when COVID first debuted in America. Like it was playing like these little off Broadway shows worldwide, Steve Willie. But if you want to make it big as a disease, you got to come to America. And so all jokes aside, we talked about just kind of the way that everything has changed over the past 12 months. Yep. So we get into that during that episode. But other than that, there's over 100 hours of content on the Patreon. We've got political shows. We've got shows dealing with pro wrestling. We got shows dealing with pop culture. We have TDT Talks, which eventually Steve and I will get back to, which is kind of our dinner party without any food, where we just kind of meet up with a bunch of friends and talk about how everybody's doing and dealing with our continued existence in this darkest timeline. So if any of that interests you, you can check it out. $5 gets you in, patreon.com/thekingsofsport. And, you know, Scott's been on, Steve's been on. So, yeah, if you enjoy hearing me talk about wrestling, just wait, Steve Willie, until they hear me talk about, like, the filibuster and parliamentary rules. Like, that's a whole nother level of conversations on the Patreon.
I'd like to filibuster Moxley's IWGP United States title reign is what I'd like to filibuster. Yeah, because Kingsport Patreon's fantastic. I'm a sponsor, Steve. We've both been on. $5 gets you in the door. If you want to sit at my table and watch Baby Simba win at Baby Blackjack, you know, it's he's a lucky charm, let me tell you. No, but he and Marcus, and they do a fantastic job. So Kingsport Patreon, everybody. Of course, over on the PTB Wrestling Network, just as much delicious content. Just dropping yesterday, if you're listening to this on Friday, newest episode of PTB NXT. Tim Capel, Jennifer Smith, Jake Williams continue their tradition of new gimmick names and then discuss the month of August 2014 for NXT TV, the August 7th, 14th, and 21st episodes. So check that out. Rory McNamara has your newest episode of Senior Video. He is joined by Sean Kidd, and they do the Hart Foundation VHS tape from 1987. So that's a pretty fun one. Check that out. Our man, Marty Sleaze from Pro Wrestling Only, with his weekly show, Pro Wrestling Love, continuing his top 100 shoot style matches of all time with his buddy, Markout Martin Matt. New episode of Chronology. Our good friends, Neil and Dave, they're talking about the fourth ever episode of Raw in 1993, so check that out. And Rory is back with Callum McDougal and Ben Locke for the newest episode of the Special Relations Podcast, so check that out as well. Coming up this week, we got a very busy week coming up ahead, the NWA Saturday Special. Dr. G and I will talk about all this NWA news and continue our GWCW countdown. Place B Podcast. Of course, new episodes of Pro Wrestling Love and Chronology this weekend as well. Special message. It's kind of a surprise. You'll see it drop Saturday afternoon. A special surprise from me. I'll just leave it at that. Just me. A gift for all of you. Please Be Podcast will drop this Monday. My PIC, Mr. Rosero, and I are with Steve Bennett, and we will do the November 30th, 1991 MSG House Show. Terry and Rick, whose business is more important? Nathaniel, whose business is more important? Rick or Terry? Rick's in Terry's world now. That's right. Terry went to Rick's world and he got what he wanted too. So who the fuck?
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's all Terry's world.
It's all Terry all the time. So there you go. So that'll be this Monday. Newest episode of Extreme Resurrection. Yes. Steve Grunberg. Steve. I almost said Steve Gutenberg. He wishes. James Grunberg and Michael Cook, along with Hooks and Tackleberry. They do their next episode, going back to the WWE incarnation of ECW. So check that out. Jacob Williams and Tyler Kelly continue their countdown of their GWCW list. So the newest episode drops Wednesday. Next Thursday, newest episode of Highway to the Impact Zone with Logan Crosland and the gang. And also a very special episode of NWA Croc and Roll next Friday. So I won't tell you what it is, but it is very, very, very special. So Sean Kidd, Callum McDougal, and Dr. G. So we won't tell you what it is. You'll have to be surprised because it's pretty awesome. So there you go. There's the PTB Wrestling Network. The fans feed. All stuff all the time. We don't sell swamp land or used Dusty Rhodes boots. Don't forget the PTB Pop Experience. Andy Atherton and the gang over there with some fun shows. The trivia. Mickey Mount Rushmore. I was just on the most recent episodes. And all the great shows over there. Of course, the Jenny Position. And the NOSO, the North-South Connection podcast feed as well. To go along with the Kings of Sport Patreon. All right. I stalled as long as I could, Steve. But it's time to get down to business. Oh, good, you're still awake. it is time, ladies and gentlemen, for our newest installment of the TNA Classic Pay-Per-View Recap. And the coolest t-shirt, I meant to mention this, guys. The coolest t-shirt was worn in this episode. I meant to mention it to you. It's a pretty awesome t-shirt that somebody wore in this episode. We'll get to it.
Okay, I think I might know what it is. Okay.
Yeah. So, the date, January 29th, 2003. NWA/TNA pay-per-view number 29. And usually, guys, lately I haven't been doing the Sports Illustrated covers, but let's do them. I just realized I hadn't been doing them, but now I want to do them. So let me go to the archives. Let me go to the 2000s. Here we go. All right. So just to recap, going back in time. Let's see. I want to do 2003. Okay, so here we go. Got to go all the way to the bottom. All right. So on the got to hit more. Only Sports Illustrated would make this site so difficult. Oh, I got to do more again? Oh, my God. It's the end of January, so you could take a shot in the dark on what is on the covers. But all right, so the January 13th cover was Ohio State Miami, the national championship game. That was the Phantom Sports pass interference call that cost Miami the game. If you remember that, boys. January 20th cover has Rich Gannon on the front and the Raiders beating the Jets in the divisional playoff. So, gentlemen, for the January 27th, 2003 issue of Sports Illustrated, who is on the front?
L. McPherson.
Yep. No, the swimsuit issue is not till, what, March? No. End of February is the swimsuit issue. You're off by a month. We think, Nate.
You mentioned the Jets, so of course that made me think of that man, Kevin Mawai. But
Kevin Mawai?
It's not Kevin Mawai. No, I'm going to see. I'm going to say you piqued my interest with that man, Rich Gannon. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to throw out a weird guess because people were infatuated with this man back then and maybe to some extent still are today. And I'm going to say Chucky was on the cover, John Gruden.
Good guess. That's an exceptional guess, Steve.
Was it soon enough to have the Super Bowl champions on the cover, the Buccaneers?
You are both close, but not quite. The Super Bowl hadn't been played yet, so it was the Super Bowl 38 cover, or 37. What game was it? 37. Super Bowl 37 preview issue. So on the front was Rich Gannon.
And Brad Johnson.
And Brad.
And no. Kathy Ireland.
And no. somebody much prettier than Kathy Ireland, Warren Sapp. So it was the preview issue for Super Bowl 37.
I was going to say, like, if it were Brad Johnson, I was like, have we had a more mediocre quarterback matchup in a Super Bowl?
Yes, and we all know what happened in that game, too. So more on that on our next episode. So, all right, boys. Wednesday night, January 29th, 2003.
Oh, yeah.
Steve, before you get us going, let me give you our undercard, our dark matches. Matt Vandal and Mike Preston beat Killer Kyle and Spider.
Wow.
Spider with a Y, by the way. Bulldog LeDuc beat Salvatore Renaro. Is that the same Sal Renaro in NWA? Holy shit.
Probably. Yeah, because he was starting out in Ring of Honor.
Like 17 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Eric Andrews and Jason B. And then, ready for this one? Tenacious Z defeated Truth Martini.
Wow, Truth.
There you go. So, those are the undercard. All right, Steve Willey, get us going.
Okay, episode 30. This was a show. So they recapped, if you remember last week's, Skipper and Loki of XXX won the tag straps, and Raven stole Jeff Jarrett's title. So we immediately start with Raven up in the rafters with the lights out. And, you know, if it's Raven, he's going to drop some truth on us all. Mm-hmm. So he said, hey, possession's 9/10 of the law. There's a revolution coming. And Scott, what does he say? What does he say he's going to do?
He's going to urinate in your bone marrow.
Yes, he is. So he introduces the Clockwork Orange House of Fun, which is going to be a match down the line. He didn't really say exactly what it was, just, you know, threw a bunch of Kubrick words together into a sentence, and lights come on, and then Jeff Jarrett is there, hits him with the trash can, throws him into the ring. He's about to put Raven through the table, but here comes your Lord and Savior, Vince Russo, and helps Raven suplex Jeff Jarrett through the table, so Raven grabs Jarrett's belt and retreats. So that was a little bit of a, it was a funny preview, but it was a good, in terms of TNA starts to a show, like, it was a decent angle to start the show, so, like, okay, we're starting off a little fast, let's get this show going, I'm going to be ready for an X Division match, usually, and it was looking good, things were looking good.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Amazing Red and Jorge Estrada. 6:17 your match time. Not bad. We all know Don West, big Amazing Red fan. Jorge Estrada with that weird interview with Goldilocks, trying to be reasonable. But it's, you know, and it's Jorge Estrada, so it's like, oh, you know, if you can't beat him, join him. Ha ha ha. You know.
Will I join sex? Will I not join sex?
Why not join sex? Yeah, exactly. I thought this match was solid. I love Amazing Red, guys. It's one guy that we've all jumped on early on since this started, and I'm all in on it. So I'm totally cool with Amazing Red winning matches. And Jorge Estrada, solid overall, solid match, Nate.
Yeah, nothing special.
Like the reason getting the win.
Yeah, nothing special here. I think, like, we've seen better out of Estrada, but I think Red, again, I don't know. Like, maybe he just had an off night. You know, we can't all be great all the time, Scotty.
Of course not.
But I think Red pulled him to a decent match, and it was more of a, you know, just kind of a Amazing Red showcase, if nothing else.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. You know, he kind of pulled out.
What do you think, Steve? Similar?
Yeah. Pulled out the win out of nowhere with the infrared and the Red Star Press. It was just kind of just about to get going, and then it was done. And then, so your second sex segment of the night, Mike Sanders comes out, and Jorge decides to say no and punches Mike Sanders. So we have a new member of SEX comes out. And do you know who that is, Nate Milton?
The man that we all think of when we think about sex. The one and only Disco Inferno, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Glenn Gilberti still getting checks.
Yeah, so one scrub comes out to save another scrub.
Yep. Hey, come on. He had a that was a pretty good interview segment he had for those few weeks.
Yes.
And then everybody from Tough Enough showed up. So I think it kind of overloaded the talent pool. But
I mean,
anyway.
It's good that you bring up talent, Scotty, because not only did we get Disco Inferno here, Steve Willie, we got Disco Inferno with a title. He is now the director of talent development for sex.
Yeah, Sanders is the director of talent acquisition. Yeah, so he is, I'm assuming, subservient to Sanders, like down on the pecking order.
Yeah, so Sanders acquires the talent and Disco develops them in this. Like, all I'm thinking of now is Sanders and Disco are like Lucy and Ethel on the conveyor belt with all the chocolates. Like, you got these two maroons trying to build up your talent. That's not going to go well, Vince Russo.
Nope, it is not. It is not. But Amazing Red gets the win, and we're good. We're good with that. So, next, Steve, what do we got?
We have like a super quick segment where Jarrett puts his hands on Bullet Barb Armstrong, wants Raven. And then we got David Flair out with his bag of potatoes. And he comes out versus Jerry Lynn. Which, I mean, immediately, how far down is our MVP?
I know.
Of TNA going.
I know. Oh my God.
Having to work quite possibly one of the worst wrestlers of this time period. Lynn's in control, gets crotched on the guard rail. One of the best comments of, I think it was Tanay who said that. He told us to keep his eye on the burlap, keep our eyes on the burlap sack. Okay. My general rule of thumb is when you have to wear your t-shirt to wrestle, you're probably out of shape. I call that the BG James rule.
Yes.
And David Flair is doing this now. So this is a trend of this show. Like, Jerry Lynn almost has to dumb down his style. We're used to seeing him in the X Division. Mm-hmm. Really keeps it basic. He like puts on a figure four, and then of course the ref is distracted or something. Truth comes out and grabs the bag away from Flair, but then he hits Jerry Lynn with it. Is it on accident? Sure didn't look like it. Like, and then he walks away anyway, even though he hit him, and Flair pins Jerry Lynn, which would have been something if it was Ric Flair. That would have been cool match, Ric Flair versus Jerry Lynn. But no, it's David. So now we have yet another person. Like, is this person with SAX? It's like, who is actually on the NWA side at this point? It's Jerry Lynn, Jeff Jarrett, AMW at this point. We have more join later on, but
I know Jorge Estrada. I don't know.
Yeah, or we don't even know about him.
Yeah.
So, Jerry Lynn's probably his worst match since he started, I would assume. But how much
can
you do?
It's also his worst opponent since he started.
I was gonna say it's at once Jerry Lynn's worst match and David Flair's best match.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of a step down when you've wrestled AJ Styles like 8 times that you get stuck with this. So, oh God, what a fucking mess. Like, of all things, I understand you're trying to put over. I understand you're trying to put over the X Division, the SEX guys and everything. But why are you putting these fucking losers over? You've got better guys in the fucking faction to put over. Why are you putting these scrubs over, Nate Milton? Why, Nathaniel? Why?
Listen, bro, that Flair name means money. I don't care if it's David Flair, Charlotte Flair, any Flair, you know? Flair equals bucks. Ride Space Mountain, look at that sack.
Did you notice, by the way, speaking of Flair or a lack thereof, did you notice, I meant to mention this earlier, guys, during Raven's promo at the beginning, he mentioned the great NWA champions, and he didn't mention Flair. Whenever anybody mentions the NWA world title and they don't mention Flair, you know they hate them. So you can add Raven to the list with Shane Douglas of guys that hate Flair, because he mentioned Jack Briscoe, Dory Funk Jr., and Harley. He did not say Flair. If you know it, when you rattle off past NWA world champions and you don't say Flair, that means you had a hard on for him for some reason. So obviously Raven's on that list with Shane Douglas.
Yeah, and they've never been afraid to drop anyone's name.
Yeah.
even if they're currently in the WWF at that time. Yeah. So
right. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. All right, so there we go. So David Flair gets the win in 5-11. Oh God, please don't ever make me say that sentence again. Well, the next sentence I'm going to say is even worse. But go ahead.
Well, Mike Tanay is doing one of his interview segments with BG James, who is dressed like a Ferris wheel operator.
I mean, he literally looked like King Kong Bundy in that interview. I mean, that fucking orange thing he had on was like 13 sizes too big. I mean, we know he's out of shape anyway, but holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked rough. I mean, he looked like Mr. Perfect rough. Speaking of Mr. Perfect, by the way, he's actually still alive as we're talking, as we're in this timeline. However, it's not too far away, just as we get there. But, I mean, it's not good. I mean, he looks awful. He looks awful. I mean, that thing was, like, so baggy and not in a good way.
Yeah, for some reason, they brought up, like, the real Jeff Jarrett gimmick, the real Double J gimmick from Vince McMahon, and that sucked. Yeah, but it lasted like 3 weeks. It wasn't even that big. It was like a shotgun Saturday night thing. Talked about Vince Russo and himself being responsible for DX. Said his, you know, his family members were jealous of him because he sold out Madison Square Garden 20 weeks in a row, Scott.
Wow.
20 weeks.
Billy Joel, eat your heart out.
Yeah, Billy Joel couldn't do that. He had to, like, spread it out over time.
I know, exactly. Holy crap. And he did it all by himself.
Yep.
Steve Who? The Who? Dwayne Who? No, it was all me, man.
Yeah, that was back in the days where they were taping Raw every week at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, they worked the Knicks schedule around it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Ewing? Nah. Forget that. Rangers? Nah. We got to get Road Dogg every Monday, man.
Yeah, so the whole point of this was for Scott Armstrong to overhear and come out to argue. So I can't wait for that match to happen. I'm assuming it is after this show.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Not good. Not good. Not good to be the face of because he kind of is. If you don't consider Russo, he's kind of the face of this faction.
Yeah, sort of. There's a moment later on that I have to I have to recall when it is where you see that this is the worst faction of all time. it might be here. I just like I don't think I wrote it down because I was watching the show. And I'm like, oh man, they did, you know, low key, and they said low key and. Triple X weren't there. So Storm and Harris come out. They talk about being the two-time champions. Wasn't fair because Triple X won 3-on-2. And they're not going to wait a week to get a title shot, even though they literally are waiting a week to get a title shot because they lost the week before. So, yeah, Triple X wasn't here. So now, yeah, this was it. Road Dogg comes out, or BG James comes out, and just makes the worst sex puns ever. So you're going to get a lesson in group sex. And this is the biggest group of jobbers in a faction ever.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The job squad had more talent than this. It was BG James, the Harris twins, Disco, Flair, and Sanders. The biggest, and Russo. So out of nowhere, because like you have to have some surprise. Because it's Vince Russo. It's a Rock and Roll Express. Now, you'd think that like if you're going to have the Rock and Roll Express and an NWA TNA show, this isn't Nitro, right? You want to entice people to buy your show. And I would say that in 2003, you know, some nostalgia, people might want to see the Rock and Roll Express. Heck, the Rock and Roll Express were over in 2019 and 2020. And nope. So this is the second surprise of the day. But it's Vince Russo, so Rock and Roll Express, are they going to be on the side of NWA? No, they're going to go in the Nikita Koloff route. They hit AMW with chairs, and it's so Tanay and it's just up in arms, like, how can you turn on AMW? How can you turn on them? Well, they've never been there. How can they just, like, they have no relationship with America's Most Wanted. I can see, like, saying, oh, they turned their back on the NWA.
Yeah.
But, yeah, how can you turn on America's Most Wanted? So, yes, now the Rock and Roll Express have joined the group of misfits. Bring some real star power.
Considering Robert Gibson has NWA on his ass. So.
Yeah. Brought the wrong tights.
Way to wear your 1985 tights. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because when I think of a hot young faction, I think of Ricky Morton. Okay.
Yeah, this has got to be in, you know, to piggyback off your point, Steve, not only one of the worst factions in terms of talent, but in terms of the construction of this group, there's no logic. Like, it's all friends of Vince. And I would have loved to been a fly on the wall to hear his pitch to Ricky and Robert as to why they should sign up for this foolishness besides the check. Because, yeah, it didn't make any sense whatsoever. And I think there was a way. Like, we've seen them incorporate legends from show one. Like, there was a way that if you wanted to bring the Rock and Roll Express in, you could have done that devoid of them joining this faction and still reap whatever benefits there were to be reaped from the Rock and Roll Express in 2003.
Especially, yeah. You have very few people, like as we just talked about, on the NWA side. And it's not like they're going to run with Rock and Roll Express for several weeks. They'll bring in Dusty Rhodes for a couple of weeks, which is essentially one taping. If I remember, they do two at once. Or, you know, they'll bring the Road Warriors in, and then they'll bring Nikita Koloff in for a couple of weeks. And so I'm assuming they'll probably be here this week and maybe next week and then be done.
Yeah, no, that's rough. You're looking at that group and you're like... Why are all the young guys in the NWA? Shouldn't the Rock and Roll Express be the faces and America's Most Wanted be the heels?
Yeah, right.
Is that kind of how this should work. But then again,
listen, bro, your mama don't dance and your daddy don't rock and roll, bro.
Oh, God. What do we got next, Steve?
Next, we have another dream.
Suffice it to say, listeners, like I know that Steve is being the brave soldier leading us through this journey. Up through this point in the show, this has been a terrible episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. It pretty much has.
Yeah,
and this match makes it absolutely no better. But
yep. So I, you know, Jerry Lynn, The Truth, you know, Low Key, your AJ, your 2002, your top guys. So now we have The Truth against Mike Sanders, and here's my little bit of positivity. At least they all have different music now. Like each guy in SEX has their own music, so it's not the same music every single segment. I didn't even take notes on this match. It was just dying at death. They were doing the Whose Side Is He On story with The Truth. Sanders just kind of worked on the leg. Truth just seemed like he had to dumb it down too, just like Jerry Lynn. So now Jerry Lynn and David Flair's out. It looks like Jerry Lynn is going to hit Mike Sanders with the burlap sack. Lynn comes in the ring, but Truth actually knees him out of the ring, and Sanders gets the roll-up for the win. So we got Mike Sanders beating The Truth, former NWA champion. Mm-hmm. We have David Flair beating former X Division champ and tag team champ Jerry Lynn. So it's a hell of a night.
If there's anybody in the history of wrestling that looks so little like a wrestler, it's Mike Sanders. He looks like a guy dressed in a Halloween costume as a wrestler. But at least he's wearing tights that say SEX on it. So he's living the gimmick. He's just not very good. And I am disgusted that The Truth had to eat this pin. So again, you need to put over the talent in this faction. I get that. But the fact remains, as we've said, that there's not much to do here. So you got to put these fucking scrubs over. And it's humiliating for like the guys that actually everybody likes, Nate Milton. It's rough. It's really
rough. I think the best thing about this match was hearing Don West describe Mike Sanders' offense as methodical. I thought that was extremely generous by Don West.
Extremely generous. Oh my God. Yeah, I agree, Steve Willey.
Yeah, this is the first show I think that, and we'll definitely see it later on, that the fans are starting to turn a bit. Like these last two matches were quiet.
Yeah,
so Goldilocks is back with the Rock and Roll Express. She had a great line where she said, you know, I thought I liked you guys. So Morton said they're the first of their kind, the first ones with music, the first ones with pyro. I still didn't get why, you know, they were all about sports entertainment before everyone else was, so that's why they joined. So at least they came up with some reason to me. Yeah. It was a bit of a stretch, but like, hey, yes. We're always sports entertainers before wrestlers. But I'll give them that at least thought of something. So Rock and Roll Express versus AMW later on tonight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and AJ Styles.
In typical Russo fashion, like not letting something breathe for a week.
Yeah, or even 10 minutes.
Yes.
So there is a lot of non-fighting in this episode. AJ Styles is out. Yep. He is. Now, is this the t-shirt you were talking about?
Bet your ass it's the t-shirt.
The what was it? The X Styles.
It was the t-shirt. the X Styles.
Yeah.
In the font of the X Files.
Yeah.
Since I just finished watching the X Files, I thought that was, as we're speaking now, as she's listening to this, Jennifer Smith is culling eBay, looking for any rare, somebody digging it out of somewhere, because that's right up her alley. So, yeah.
I remember that actually being a pretty decent seller back in the day.
I wish they'd bring, see, that's one thing I wish Impact would do is bring back, because they technically could still sell AJ's TNA stuff. It's not licensed to WWE. It's not like they own it. Because that shirt was awesome. It said the X Styles in the X Files font. I think that's so awesome. I love that. That was the first real highlight of this episode so far. It's that T-shirt, Steve. So, when an inanimate object is your MVP, you got things to think about.
Yeah. So yeah, AJ is out. He says he's the Mac Daddy of the X Division, but he wants to be the heavyweight champ. And what else does he have to do to win? And he just keeps chanting, what else do I have to do? Raven's out, says, hey, I don't think you're ready. AJ with even a better line than Goldilocks, is that a syringe in your skirt? Or are you just happy to see me? and go back to the sex locker room so you can shoot up with more heroin. Just great stuff by AJ.
That's fantastic.
Jarrett's out, hits a stroke on AJ Styles. gets the belt back. Raven bails out. It was a real weak segment, too.
Yeah. Yes, this is in the, where we're still in the era of AJ not being a great promo.
Yeah.
No.
And you don't even need him to be a great promo. That's like the thing of it, really. Like, just get him out there and wrestle. But today's a talking one. Imagine spending $10 on this episode.
Oh, I'd rather spend $10 on that T-shirt.
Unfortunately, not on eBay. I was checking as you guys were.
Yeah,
talking.
I was too. I checked this morning and I was looking. I'm like, man, I'd kill for that shirt. No, alas, somebody had it up back. Somebody had it on eBay back in 2017, and it was, you know, it was bought and no one's put one up since. Somebody's got to have it somewhere. Come on. The X Styles. I mean, it's great. My God, that's great. TNA, one thing I'll say about TNA, they may have had some, I just threw out a Jeff Hardy shirt that I don't wear anymore. But one thing about TNA, they did occasionally have a decent T-shirt. Occasionally, they'd have a decent T-shirt. The SEX T-shirts aren't really that bad. Right now, they're just covering up a lot of flab. But they are they are bad T-shirts, though. You know? So. AJ does wrestle, thank God.
He does wrestle, yeah, and out comes Larry Zbysko, who returns last week.
Because that's what we need.
He's ready to go. He is in his gear, and AJ's slowly getting up from the stroke, and Zbysko says, you want the championship? You need some more wisdom. If you want to have the Ferrari, and then he said, if you want to have the deaf mutes? Like, did you hear that? Like, the blonde deaf mutes. He was talking about women, yeah, call them deaf mutes. So he says that he heard AJ talk about him losing in 5 minutes. So Zbysko double dog dared him to beat him twice in 10 minutes. And then so they start the match. And, you know, it was meant to be impromptu. But all of a sudden Don West is like, oh, if Larry wins and AJ doesn't win twice, he has to sign on with Larry, and Larry has to be his manager. And I'm like, wait, they never said that. That's not a thing. But it turned out it was a thing. So
if Larry Zbysko can hold on and win, AJ Styles has to give his 2003 first quarter earnings.
Which was a fraction of $9.99 a week.
Pretty yes. Much. Yeah, pretty much.
So whatever residuals he still got from NWA Wildside.
Wildside, yep.
So Larry's dominating this match, and it's not bad. He's doing some cool submission moves, a couple that I hadn't even really seen before. Fans are actually getting behind Larry, but I'm just thinking at this point, like, what is with the show? Because it's like they're taking all of their stars, and I don't want to say burying them, because that's a little much, but they're having them lose to nobody. AJ gets, like, a pin at, like, 7 minutes in, just with his moonsault to the reverse DDT. I didn't even think there was no clock up at all. I don't think the crowd knew the stips because we didn't know it until the announcer said it.
Right.
Now, like, Mortimer Plumtree comes out. AJ's already said the last few weeks that Mortimer's not with him, yet Mortimer hands AJ knuckle, brass knucks, and They flew in, and Mortimer tried to throw powder in Larry's eyes. That missed. Mortimer, like, wedged a chair in the corner, and basically the time ran out. So AJ only got one win, not two. So Larry Zbysko is now AJ Styles' manager, but they don't announce that to the crowd. So the crowd has no idea the angle around this. So we now have Larry Zbysko defeating AJ Styles, Mike Sanders defeating The Truth, and David Flair beating Jerry Lynn. And you can't possibly, like, bury any more of your top talent.
Pretty much.
I mean, like, there's, like, no way.
No. This is abysmal. Mm-hmm. This is probably so far, and we still have two matches left. This is probably the worst show we've had since since probably like the summer of 02.
Yes.
The previous year. Like, those July, August shows were a little shaky. I understand the storyline progression, but the show just feels like it's disjointed. And then you've got all these jobbers putting over your established talent. It just makes no sense. I understand, and we understand, Nate Milton, that we got to put over the sex guys. But why these guys? And then the one sex guy, I just like saying sex guy, the one sex guy that needs to be put over loses to a guy that's like fucking 59 years old. I mean, seriously? For stipulations, only the six people that bought this show actually know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Scotty. Like, I feel like, especially in 2021, especially in the midst of this pandemic, Steve Willie, that we do need to support the sex workers out there. but this whole show has been terrible. Like, and, like, I had low energy when I watched this show earlier this week, and that this show did not help. But that being said, this was probably the best match of the show up until now.
This was definitely the best match.
Yeah.
And, like, here's the other thing that's weird. Because I think there's a good idea with Larry Zbysko being the mouthpiece for AJ Styles. Because as we just saw, AJ's not a great promo right now. And it divorces AJ from all the stupid Mortimer Plumtree stuff. Like, we could have gotten to AJ and Larry without having this match. But again, that being said, this was probably the best thing on the show up until this point.
Yeah.
I mean, our main event is coming up next in the next segment, but up until then, this is the best thing on the show so far.
Yeah. Not good. And the result, the match might have been good, but the result was just hot trash. All right, hot. Steve. You're doing great. Just keep it up, man.
Okay. Main event time.
Oh, man. I don't even know how to break this down. So Goldilocks introduces Percy Pringle. So, I mean, Percy is back. She's like, I'm really sorry to have to ask you this, but how was it like to be humiliated by SEX? And Percy's like, you know, I'm being honored at the California Alley Club. When he bled, he saw Russo. And you'll never know when he's going to strike back, but he's going to strike back. And then Mike Tenaya had been just kind of teasing that one of his colleagues will come back. And so immediately you knew, oh, this is this episode. And out comes Tony Schiavone in a Hawaiian shirt with a Kiss t-shirt underneath. And this is an all-timer. This is where he comes back. And then famously this past year on AEW said that, you know, that he was not in wrestling for 16 years after this event.
Yep.
It took him 16 years to return to wrestling after this show. That's how bad it was. So he's like, man, I've never seen people kiss ass so much. Like, why haven't I have a job? Like, oh, and here's Goldilocks. You know why they call you that? Because who's been sleeping in my bed? You make Pamela Paulshock look like Diane Sawyer.
That was the number two quote of the show.
Yes.
After urinating on bone marrow.
You make
Pamela Paulshock look like Diane Sawyer.
Schiavone bringing the heat.
Wow. Talk about dropping bombs. Wow.
He's like, he starts making like penis jokes, which was really weird to hear Tony Schiavone do. So Tanae comes in the ring. He starts chewing out today. I did like him saying, I was doing Great American Bash when you were doing dirt sheets. But then for the first time ever, TNA's crowd turns on the show. not just quiet, they just start chanting for everyone to shut the F up. I cannot recall any time in these 30 episodes that the crowd actively, I mean, they'll boo the heels. They'll be racist to the truth.
Yeah.
You know, you get your garden variety homophobia.
Yeah. But this is the first time they actually turned on the company itself. And unless you guys can think of anything. And then you really, like, you think about that group of jobbers that came out earlier on to attack AMW. You technically, at this point, have a five-way match because Vince Russo then comes to the ring. You have a five-way match between Vince Russo, Tony Schiavone, Paul Bearer, Mike Tenay, and Goldilocks. That is, so what is the point? Like, what are they trying to get to by this? That, like, who goes over? Is it, like, they're just trying to, like, ooh, here's Tony Schiavone shocking people. Yeah, awful.
Yeah, this was the worst and best thing on this show, Steve Willie.
Yeah.
Because, like, from starting it, like, everything was so meta in the way that Russo defines meta, where, you know, we've got Percy Pringle talking about, you know, being honored by the Cauliflower Alley Club, and we've got heel Tony Schiavone, which is something nobody asked for in 2003, showing up, and then we get Mike Tenay as the defender of TNA's honor, and this segment is so bad, Scott, despite the performances, because I love heel, like, douchebag, like, it should have been me, Tony Schiavone, and plucky upstart underdog, even though he was probably like 50 at the time, plucky upstart underdog Mike Tenay. Like, all of that stuff is interesting in a vacuum, but in the context of a show that has already been one of the worst shows we've ever seen from this company, it just adds to the level of, like, why am I even here? Why did I spend $10 on this when I could have bought, you know, a six-pack and had the same amount of enjoyment to this point, Steve, with that six-pack of beer than I am watching this TNA show.
You enjoyed it a little bit, though. I mean,
but not as much as those six-pack of that cold Michelob.
Yeah, at the time, like I remember this.
And then, yeah, well, at the time, like $2,003, you might even be able to get you a 12-pack for $10, Steve Willie.
That's funny. Yeah.
12-pack of Lowenbrow or 3 hours of Russo booking? I don't even know if they still make Lowenbrow.
No, they don't. I wish they did. I like Lowenbrow. My dad used to drink Lowenbrow.
Yeah, I never had a sip of it. I just remember the commercials as a kid.
No, my dad, we had Lowenbrow in my fridge. My dad drank it. All right. So we still have matches left, actually.
Do we?
Here we go.
Do we, Steve Willie?
Okay. This is going to be my hot take of the night. Yeah, I don't think you guys are going to see this coming. So we have Kid Cash and Trinity versus Siaki and Desire. So an actual storyline. Mm. You know, there was a reason for this match. You know, they had their thing last week. So they're starting again. They're starting to at least separate some of people of Sex Off and have their own storylines. Man, they could have done this whole show and just done singles matches with Siaki in this match, and then like Skipper against AJ and Low Key against, you know, they could have done something like that. So right away, like, Kid Cash does a double springboard Rana, but he does it in the wrong corner, so he almost takes out Desire when he does it. Siaki clotheslines Cash as Cash comes off the top rope. So I'm like, okay, maybe this is at least going to get us somewhere. Kid Cash like does the Rob Van Dam Van Terminator spot, only he does it from the middle of the ring off the springboard, barely brushes Siaki, but I respect the effort. So here's my hot take of the day. Trinity gets tagged in. She has a moonsault to the floor. She does like a rolling arm bar on Desire. And I'm like, I just thought this, and maybe it's just because I've watched Rock and Roll Express, Tony Schiavone and Disco Inferno debut on the show. And maybe I'm just was, and I think I watched the first hour and a half all at once. Mm. And maybe my brain was just addled with all of this ADHD theater. I'm like, why wasn't Trinity a star in wrestling? Mm. Why was she? She's got a great look. She's like Lita, but better. Mm. Not as beautiful as Lita, but like she's a better athlete. She could have fit in today.
Yeah.
Like that armbar was legit. And yeah, that's my hot take of the evening.
Hmm. Yeah, she was too far ahead of her time because we wouldn't get the knockouts until I think another year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
And really more once they split onto Fox Sports and mm-hmm. and got off of TNA pay-per-views and that really started getting better. I think. Because like Kong and Kim and them.
Yeah, I think she had a good match with like eventually, spoiler alert, for a show 17 years old. Eventually they bring Jacqueline in, so Trinity actually has somebody that she can work with. No shade to Desire and Athena. But yeah, so like other than the Jacqueline matches, there's a whole lot of nothing for Trinity to do because they're really not interested in her wrestling the guys either.
No, and they could have. They really could have. Especially with some of like, you know, like put her in a six person with like, you know, the SAT or like one of those crazy scramble matches or something like that. And I think she would have done fine in there.
Yeah. She could have been Tessa Blanchard before Tessa Blanchard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, there's jokes there and I just don't. I'm just
yes, there's a lot of jokes. what if Tessa Blanchard is the mystery guest on AEW?
She's in the ladder match now. Yeah, so Siaki ended up beating down Trinity. It's really the first time we saw Desire win. The match just broke down. Athena comes out and slaps Desire, and there's like a really weak roll up by Trinity for the win. And just like it had a little bit of momentum in the middle. I thought it was gonna like, oh, this might go somewhere, but just a super disappointing finish.
Yeah, yeah, but it was good though, and I like. It's weird. Sonny Siaki's in this faction, yet he's not in this faction.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel they just put him there because he's the like a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very weird. Very weird.
Yeah, he wasn't out with them, I don't think, in any of the segments.
No.
Well, that's the thing. Like with AJ too. Like, I feel like there's everybody's in sex, but like there's different delegations within sex.
And AJ had pretty much said in the segment that he's not with sex. So who knows? I can't keep track. If they can't explain it, we don't need to.
Right.
Yeah.
So Tony Schiavone's out again.
He thinks Mike Sanders is going to take his spot. That's why.
Schiavone's out again. Just rags on Athena for no apparent reason. calls her a slut and like I don't get it. And then so like then he starts bashing Tane again, and I literally no idea why he's out here. And then Conan comes out,
yes,
for the third week in a row, starts beating Siaki with a kendo stick. Then he goes and starts chewing out Tane, and I don't know why everyone has something against Tane the last couple of weeks.
I know, right?
Russo hates him, Schiavone hates him, Conan hates him. But yeah, that was that whole segment. The cops come, they, you know, he's not supposed to be here. Conan doesn't even have a contract.
But the fairgrounds don't have doors, so this is what happens. It's what happens when you have a tent. So you know. But yeah, poor Tane. It's like, God, the baby faces hate me. The heels hate me. Why does everybody hate me? Because I know where all the Mexican wrestlers are? No. Yeah. Not fair.
All right, so final match here. Rock and Roll Express versus America's Most Wanted. At least America's Most Wanted gets a main event. You know, they show that they're important.
Correct.
At least to the men, you know, so that's a big thing. Yeah, this was... I kind of stopped recapping at this point because it was just too much. Ricky and Robert did take some bumps. Like, they look good
right.
for their age. Yeah. And, I mean, you got Ricky Morton out here in 2020, 2021 doing Canadian Destroyer stuff to right. Anything for a buck, Ricky Morton. And again, like just to hammer the point home, they're making AMW slow down their style. They've used to have these huge brawls, is what we're used to seeing them have, and this is just kind of a slow, prodding match. AMW did show their Rock and Roll Express tribute act, pulling out some of their moves.
Yes.
Like Gibson tried to do the hop over the top rope and almost killed himself.
Yes.
Like tripping over the top rope. And eventually got a hot tag after beating down whoever. I can't be bothered.
It's always nice to see somebody play Ricky Morton against Ricky Morton.
Yes.
Yes. It's true.
So they hit the death sentence. The referee see this is great. The referee sees them hit their finishing move, goes for the cover, and then just decides to turn around and see what's happening outside of the ring. Because there was like the ref just distracted himself. And so that Elix Skipper, who he's not even supposed to be here, came in the ring, hit someone with a belt off the top rope. I don't remember which guy got pinned, and Rock and Roll Express wins. So every match was won by jobbers of SAX.
I think Storm got pinned. Let me see. Okay. Yeah, James Storm got pinned. Ricky Morton pinned James Storm. 8:48, your match time.
Yeah, so four of your six winners, Sanders, Flair, Rock and Roll Express, Larry Zbyszko. And then the Disciples of Church come back. We haven't seen them in a few weeks, and they attack Elix Skipper and Sex. So, like, oh, the Disciples of Church, they are behind NWA. They stand for tradition. Of all people.
Yep.
It's not even a swerve. It's just stupid.
Yeah, it is. Then we get, do we get the brawl first or do we get Don and Mike?
We get Don and Mike breaking everything down.
Yeah. So I'll help you out here, Steve.
Thank you.
Don and Mike announced the matches for next week. Amazing Red will get an X Division title shot with Sonny Siaki. So we'll have that.
At least we have that.
We have that. Elix Skipper and Low-Ki will defend the NWA tag titles against Disciples of the New Church. See, look at that, huh? Tradition example personified. They already get a title shot. I don't think they got their title shot back from when they lost to AMW anyway, but anyway. And Ron Killings, Jerry Lynn, Mike Sanders, and David Flair in an elimination match. I don't like the sound of that whatsoever. Then we end the show with more brawling between Raven and Jarrett. Jarrett finally gets his belt back. And there's more brawling. And yeah, it's obvious we're leading towards a giant main event of Raven. And
Hold on, Scotty, because you mentioned Jarrett gets his belt back, which is all fine and good. But that's not where we leave the NWA World Heavyweight Championship.
Nope.
It's AJ Styles absconds with it at the end of the show. And that was the point. Like, this whole show has been pretty bad. That was the point, Scotty, where I was just like, you know what? Like, I think there was an opportunity with Raven the week before to get a buzz and to capitalize on any curiosity buys that they might have gotten this week, you know, back in 03, but this is the show they gave people. This is the show Vince Russo decided to sit in his office and write down. And it was like, if I'm coming in off the street just with a curiosity buy, what's my incentive to come back the following week, Steve Willie?
None. I'm glad we have 4 weeks before we have to do this again.
All right,
I'm actually madder now than I was after I was done watching the show.
Well, we pray that the entertainment value goes up for the next show, which will be on, well,
yeah,
two episodes from now, episode 170. But it's technically the date is February 5th of 2003.
Yeah, this was by far one of the worst episodes of NWA we've watched, or TNA we've watched.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Because even the midget, even like the puppet shows and all that, at least they had like just blow away X Division matches, like your AJ and Low-Ki and Jerry Lynn, or, you know, like the AJ and Amazing Red matches. Like, there were some just killer matches on some of those shows that made up for it. There was not even good wrestling on this show.
No.
Like, at all.
No, there wasn't. It was the matchups didn't jive, and the wrong guys won. It just was, yeah. Things are not.
We got to put over this young talent like Larry Zbysko and the Rock and Roll Express.
And the Rock and Roll Express, yep. And we got to put over the talentless talent like Mike Sanders and David Flair.
I think this goes to show you, Steve. This is why they had to bring in Disco Inferno so he could start developing this talent. I'm sure Disco was out there before the show teaching Ricky and Robert how to lock up.
Teaching Ricky and Robert.
Collar and elbow.
Collar and elbows. Flippy floppies. Oh, my God. Anyway, that'll do it for this. You're good, Steve. You're good. That'll do it for this week's episode of The Main Event. It's been a blast. We will talk to you in 2 weeks where we'll actually preview WWE Fastlane. These guys will preview, well, we'll talk about back in the battle, the NWA pay-per-view. These guys will give their picks. We will preview Fastlane. We'll see the fallout from Revolution and see an update on the New Japan Cup tournament and tons more. And we'll see if we have time. You know, Steve is still doing his adding and subtracting of our GWCW list. So maybe in 2 weeks, Steve will be with it. For Brother Nate, I am Brother Steve. I am Brother Steve. He's Brother Scott. I have a perm. No. Oh, God. Let's get. Damn you, Mike Sanders. Be safe, everybody. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Hey, Nate.
Yes,
Milton.
Nate Milton.
The real Steve Willie.
I'm standing up.
See, here's normally the part of the show where I'd have a joke for you, Steve, but yeah. In lieu of this show that has sapped all of the joy out of my body and my being, I think this would be a nice time to tip the cap to the late great Brother Crockett.